Good morning. You might say a bit disjointed, but I deliberately did that because I wanted to see what is basically the theme of our message today, because we're talking about the early church matures, mission and growth. And as you can see there with those scriptures, I highlighted certainly there was growth. I just want to pick out one thought there. It's not part of my range of scriptures, but I thought it was important to put a context in to what is happening in the book of Acts. And if I press the right button here, I hope. I just want to read the bit in red. "And you will be my witnesses, telling people about me everywhere, in Jerusalem, throughout Judea, in Samaria, and to the ends of the earth." I call this Jesus' mandate. Remember, as Jesus was about to ascend, these are actually the last words of Jesus. Before they see him ascend into heaven. And he tells them... They, of course, are wanting to know what's going to happen. They're thinking, you know, Jesus, you know, you came and you're going to throw out the Romans and we're going to be triumphant and everything. And he says, forget about all that. You know, it's interesting that Christians still thinking in those terms. And he says, no, you will be my witnesses, telling people everywhere about me. And so that's what I want you to remember, the context as we move forward. And as we've seen already, Greg gave a good overview last week of kind of the context and everything of Luke. We've got to remember that this is being written by Luke, the physician. And he has chosen what he's going to write and where he's going to put it. And so we see that Peter travels from place to place. He's already obeying what Jesus said to do. He's beginning to travel from place to place. And he comes to this place called Lydda. We might just move that. Can you see? Anyway, maps are so hard to get clear in PowerPoint. And when he gets there, there's this man who's been paralyzed and bedridden for 8 years. Now, obviously, he must have been a member of the church there in Lydda, because that's where Peter has come to. And Paul just... Peter, this is going to be difficult to get Peter and Paul mixed up. Peter said to him, "Aeneas, Jesus Christ heals you, get up. Roll up your sleeping mat." And he was healed instantly. Then the whole population of Lydda and Sharon saw Aeneas walking around, so he must have gone outside, and they turned to the Lord. So the first thing we need to see here and understand is that a miracle happens. Peter was very strategic. One of the things we grasp as we read the book of Acts, particularly, Peter and Paul were very strategic in how they chose the places they would go to. And here is another example of how strategic it was. It's 25 miles from Jerusalem, and it's a crucial intersection. So there'd be people coming and going. They'd be going up to Joppa. They'd be going up to Egypt, to Syria, and so on. A very strategic position. Now, Peter has journeyed from Jerusalem. That's his comfort zone. And this is one of the things I want us to understand today. If we're going to see the church mature, if we're going to see mission and growth, we're going to have to get out of our comfort zone. Where is our comfort zone? Our homes and sitting in church in our lovely blue chairs. That's our comfort zone. But Paul had to leave his comfort zone in Jerusalem. And he goes traveling from place to place. There's a miracle. You know, I was born again in a revival. An evangelist came to my hometown. It was called the Preacher's Graveyard because every person that tried to have a campaign there, his tent was usually destroyed and he was run out of town. And a Tennessean by the name of Alvin S. Worley had to be successful. Alvin S. Worley and his wife came and he had great success. And my mother was going through some really difficult times in her life, and she happened to see an advertisement in the paper and went along. And the Lord changed her life dramatically. And a few days later, she took myself and my siblings along, and we gave our life to Christ. My mother was a pianist. You only had to play something to her once, and she could sit down and play it. She had an incredible ear, couldn't read a note of music. And after a while, the evangelist pianist had to go back because she was getting married. And he said to my mother, "Would you be my pianist?" "Oh, I can't do that," he said. "You can play anything." Anyway, a church was established and we became part of that church. And then another pastor came to take it over. And he was an evangelist and he went off evangelizing around the country. He went south to a town down south. And he said to my mother, "I need someone to play the piano. Will you come?" So she trotted off. She used to hire a Volkswagen, and away she'd go. I'm still trying to think who looked after us kids. Because I was only about 13. And I was the oldest. Now she tells me the story that one day she used to go around the town. It was only a small town. She'd go around the town handing out a tract to people, inviting them to a meeting. And she went into a cafe. And sitting at a table was this man, bent over double, having his tea. And she walked up to him and said, "Excuse me." And he kind of crawled out. And he said, "Oh, Missy, do you want my seat?" She said, No. "I just want to invite you to an evangelistic meeting." And she gave him the thing. Well, that night, as she's at the piano, she sees this man walked in, and he's walking in like this. At the end of the service, this evangelist used to have a prayer line, and this man came up. And he was prayed for. And my mother said, she was sitting at the piano, and she said, an absolute crack sounded through the thing, and the man stood bolt upright and walked out. The next night, a man turned up, and at the end of service came up to beautifully groomed, and he said, "Oh, Missy, thank you. Oh, thank you so much." She said, "Who are you?" She said, "I was that man, that dirty old man that you invited to the service, and now I'm healed." See, what I want you to understand is that God is still able to perform miracles. Not necessarily like we would like them to be, because life is still normal. We still get old and decrepit. We still end up maybe with a walking frame. But that's life. But God still has miracles even in the modern day. So they turn to the Lord. Now we come to the second miracle at Joppa. Now this is again, it's actually the modern city of Jaffa. And it was a seaport. So again, it's a crucial part because it's the only natural harbour on the Mediterranean between Egypt and the Ptolemais, another strategic location. And here's where our story of Dorcas comes in, or Tabitha. Now, she's kind. The thing I want you to get out of the story of Tabitha or Dorcas is that there are many ways we can serve God. This lady, Dorcas, was a seamstress. She made clothes and she was very much helping the widows, particularly destitute widows, which we know Paul would later on tell the church that this is something they ought to do. And she's sick and she dies. And so the believers hear that Paul is just a few kilometres away, a few miles away, and they send two men to say, "Paul, Peter, please come." Now, it doesn't say, it doesn't really say. The thing with Luke is he leaves a lot unsaid. I saw in the children thing that there was a fair bit of poetic license. But I guess they were thinking, well, surely Peter can do something. So he arrives back at the house where she is. And it said she'd been washed but not prepared for burial. So she couldn't have been dead for very long. And of course, she's a very kind, she's a very respected, she's a lady that everybody loves, and particularly the widows that she has helped. And they're all there crying. And so Peter ushers them all out. And he kneels and prays. And then he said the same thing he said to Aeneas. "Tabitha, get up." She opens her eyes and he helps her up. And then he calls the widows and believers. And it said the news spread. Well, wouldn't it spread? Wouldn't it spread? And it said, many believed in the Lord. So now we've had two miracles in two different towns, in two different circumstances, and one more difficult than the other, because I've prayed plenty of time for sick people, but I haven't yet tried any dead people. I don't think I'm quite at that level of faith yet. Now, I'm going to tell you about another miracle. This one is a creative miracle that is just... And the amazing thing about this miracle, and it happened in a country to our north, was it was in a youth gathering, a home group youth gathering. And one of the young people from that youth gathering had invited this Muslim girl to come to the meeting. And that night they were talking about God performing miracles and God being able to heal. And this girl had sat there with her hand kind of inside her clothing. And after they kind of finished talking, this girl suddenly said, "Do you think God can heal me?" And she pulls her hand out and all her fingers are only little stubs. They'd never grown. They were just stubs. Now, young people, they don't think of the implications. They don't think of the embarrassment of it not working. They just said, "Of course God could heal you." And they prayed and nothing happened. But young people, they're not deterred, so they prayed again. Nothing happened. Undeterred, they prayed for again. And as they prayed for her, they watched her fingers grow. And suddenly she had a hand that was normal. Now that was only in the last number of years.
So
I want you to understand that God is still at work in the world. So Peter stays a long time. I always get mixed up with these things. Peter stayed a long time in Joppa, living with Simon the Tanner. Now, this is very interesting. Peter is a Jew. And tanners dealt with carcasses and thus strong odours. They normally had to reside outside the walls of the city, and conservative Jewish pietists would limit involvement with them. They wouldn't have anything to do with them. Since those in contact with carcasses or dead, the dead, were ritually impure. Like Gentiles, however, Jews were often more concerned with the odours. Later rabbis even ruled that tanners' wives should be permitted to divorce them because of the odours associated with tanning. One of their funny rules. And I just question, was God preparing Peter for his encounter with the angel and Cornelius? It's incredibly interesting. It's incredibly interesting that Peter would go and stay with this Simon. When he understood, and in fact, when you read the story of Cornelius, as you will next week, you realize what implications it had for him in his religiosity. Now I needed the hinge. I needed the hinge. And I've called this So Peter turns his attention, Luke will turn his attention to Christian mission to the Gentiles world, Acts 13 onwards. But before he does, he takes the opportunity of preventing two further glimpses of God's working on behalf of the believers in Jerusalem. Luke wants to make the point that though he's about to portray the advance of the gospel within the Gentile world, he's not finished with the church in Jerusalem. So I've called this part, Meanwhile in Jerusalem. Now King Agrippa begins to persecute the Christians. Agrippa was the grandson of Herod and nephew of Herod Antipas. He was appointed king over Judea by Emperor Claudius. Claudius, if you've seen the movie. So he kills the apostle James, who was John's brother. It is thought that John possibly left Jerusalem at that time because the next appearance of John is in Ephesus. And so he kills James, and he sees this is very pleasing to the Jewish people. So he has Peter arrested. And this took place during the Passover celebration. He puts him in prison, and he intended to bring Peter out for public trial after Passover. Now, this Herod Agrippa was a practice. He practiced in the Jewish religion, and you know he did all the things. So he's really ingratiating himself to the Jewish people by killing James and then arresting Peter. But while Peter was in prison, the church prayed. The church's response was to pray earnestly and for the duration of Peter's imprisonment. The very language there in the Greek indicates that it was for the duration. Passover was a 10-day, it was quite a lengthy period of time. So Peter's in prison for a while, and the church begins to pray. So Luke contrasts the power of the state. I thought this was very, very interesting. So Peter was kept in prison, and the power of the church, prayer. Prayer is the only weapon it has, but it is more than enough. Now, I think Luke had a sense of humour. I'm sure he had a sense of humour. Because he records an amusing narrative to Peter's release from prison. Now, we know the story. He's in prison. He's got this series of guards, four guards protecting him on a roster. And Peter's asleep. I love the way you read the stories of Paul and Silas or Peter, these ones, or Jesus asleep in the boat, Paul and Silas singing hymns. Peter asleep, and he knows that Agrippa has it in for him. But he's asleep, and an angel turns up. He has to really shake Peter to wake him up. You know, when you're in the center of God's will, you can rest. So anyway, there's a prayer meeting going on at Mary's house. That's the mother of John Mark, and it must have been quite a big house. And many people were gathered there. Anyway, the angel comes, lets Peter out, and remember the story. Peter follows the angel, but he's not really sure what's going on. It's not till the angel leaves him out in the street that suddenly he wakes up that, oh, I've had a visitation from an angel. And then he goes to Mary's house and he begins knocking on the door. And a little servant girl by the name of Rhoda goes rushing to, she obviously hears the knocking. She goes to the door, hears Peter's voice and gets so excited. Young people sometimes get excited. And instead of opening the door, rushes back to tell the people praying that Peter's at the door. But the people refuse to believe it's Peter. Even though she says, I heard Peter's voice. They tell Rhoda she's out of her mind. Can you see the humour of this? Lord, please release Peter from prison. Please, Lord. Lord, we know you're a good God. Release Peter from prison. And when the girl comes and says he's at the door, they say, you're out of your mind. Lord, help Peter. They then decide, no, it must be an angel. No, the angel had done his work in the prison. Now this was the real Peter. So Rhoda says, no, it's Peter. So finally they go and open the door. And it said they're amazed. They're amazed. They're amazed that their prayer was answered. Peter motions them to silence and he tells the story. So what do these stories tell us? Some of them are miracles are God's means of confirming his word. I sometimes hear people talking about miracles as if I only have to pray and it's a miracle. But I believe it's more that God uses them strategically. Each of those miracles that we saw were with strategic. Peter had work to do, so God strategically got him out of prison. Lydda needed to hear the gospel, so the miracle was strategic. We all need to be strategic if we want the gospel to be effective. News of God at work will spread and draw people in. Tyrants get their comeuppance. The interesting thing is later King Agrippa, he takes off up to some other place. And while there, they laud him as a god. And instead of saying, no, I'm just a man, like the angel in Revelation, he soaked it all up. Because that was the ultimate success for a Caesar was to be declared a god. And God struck him down. And he died. So I've called that tyrants get their comeuppance. Not always in the timing we'd like, but God takes care of them. God answers fervent prayer. Young people are not always listened to. That's something we need to consider. We need to consider, how are we developing young people to be future leaders of our churches? We at times must leave our comfort zone in order to share the gospel. The idea of build it and they will come does not wash with God. God says, you will be my witnesses. This story of Peter takes him to the edge of Judea and then back to Jerusalem. From chapter 13 on, we see a real spread right into the rest of the world. And finally, prayer should be our first resort to deal with a crisis. If it is not, it reveals we are depending on something or someone other than God. We should be greatly comforted that God answers such faithless prayers. We all tend to be unbelieving believers at times. And so I think the lesson we learn from these chapters is that the gospel has to go out from us. Whether it's in our workplace, in our university, in our school, wherever we are, there is opportunity for the gospel to go out. And God wants it to go to the uttermost parts of the earth. And there's still many places in the world today that do not and have not heard the gospel. God bless you, and we're going to have a third song, What a Beautiful Name.